滞留に寄り添ってカップを巻かればまた暗渠に落ちていくようだ。何か見える何か響いてる
Open anime discussion. How you doing out there, fellow weebs? How you doing? We're turning so many people into weebs now. We're turning my good pal, of course, this is the show's namesake, basically. My good pal, 22484, we're turning you into a weeb.
I am getting weebified.
You are getting weebified.
I'm just going to be straight up. I'm just so excited that I had to do this podcast tonight. I even started rewatching the previous episodes. I was a little too tired to finish it completely, but it's so interesting and so like I am ready for more. I want more of the show.
Shove
like,
it all into my mouth. Give
yes,
me more.
All the way. Go show deep all the way.
it's great. Like it's fun being. Cause I am in the same boat where like. I am rewatching these episodes to take the notes, and I'm just getting more and more excited about, like, oh my god, what is next? What? And the brain is turning over theories, and like, what is going on? You know, and it's there's so much. I've never done a show in this format before, but now I'm interested. I'm really having a great time here in doing this. And the show that we're working with is an absolute jam after three episodes so far. And I think we've also won an award already for the most poodles per episode. So
oh, poodle.
Poodle.
I like poodle.
This is only funny to us.
yeah, probably. That's okay.
But that's okay.
Every time.
It's our damn podcast, and we can do whatever we want.
Poodlecast.
Poodlecast. Exactly. It's our poodlecast.
Yeah.
We just created a whole new noun for this very thing that we're doing.
Noun creation is actually the full point of the show.
Yeah.
We're going to spring it on to you now.
That and teaching you English through
noun.
Anime.
Of course.
It's working great so far.
Yeah, I probably learned more in English watching this than I have actually speaking to anybody who speaks English in the last 10 years. So, yeah.
Hey, you know, given the last 10 years. Yeah. All right, Toad, our assignment last time was to watch episodes 4 through 6 of Odd Taxi, and just like last time, we are going to sit here, and we're going to barrel through the episode. We're going to barrel through each episode and kind of talk about it, just drop our thoughts, theories, whatever happens to come out, just let it go. Like, you got verbal diarrhea, spray it all over the microphone. We always say something just absurdly disgusting at the start of every episode, too, right? I think the last time it was like, what was it? We said something really disgusting and had to be like, yeah this is NSFW, isn't it? So now we've got verbal diarrhea spray, so.
Yeah.
That'll get you that. There's all the focus you need right there. Just focus.
All right, yeah, I am in now. Verbal diarrhea spray.
All right. So we start with episode 4, Tanaka's Revolution. And this is kind of an oddball episode, actually. This is a little out of left field because this is a show that when we end the third episode, we are like right in the middle of intrigue and mystery and like what's going on? Like, you know, like mystery, like where's the girl? Like, is she in Odakawa's house? Like, what's going on? And then they throw us a whole curveball here because instead of just picking up where we left off, they just throw us into like an episode that's just dedicated to one character's backstory. And it's like, this is the character Tanaka, who we'll come to know him as. This is the character who at near the end of the last episode, he was like the puma in the gray or in the blue hoodie. He was walking across the street playing his video game on his phone. He got a rare dodo and then almost just gets hit. Like, dude, straight up, like I don't even know what's going on here. Like, I don't even think Odakawa even swerved to miss this guy.
No, I don't think they did.
I think he just straight up barreled through, and I got questions about that. but this episode opens with that dude, and he's kind of like, he's just kind of walking through town. He looks rather worse for wear. He looks like a damn maniac.
Yeah, he's a little rough around the edges.
Had better days.
I think the start, does he, at the very start, oh yeah, he's very disheveled, sorry, he's clutching the brown, you're right.
He's
you're
got
right.
a brown bag, like, the what's that
bag.
All about?
Yeah,
like,
that's right, it's and, very interesting.
And then he kind of jumps into this story, he's like, all right, you want to know how I got here? This all started, like, 4 years ago, and, at present, Tanaka works at a game company, and he plays a lot of free-to-play games. And from that point, he's like, all right, no, it doesn't just start here. It goes even further back. So we're going all the way back to the roots of everything in elementary school. And he had a homeroom teacher that was very conscious of the wealth gap. And always kind of enforced rules that ensured that, like, everybody had, like, similar possessions. Like, and I think that's kind of a cool idea. I
mean, that's a pretty great idea.
One of the major problems in school is obviously, you know, rich kids versus not so fortunate kids. And I think that's a cool idea. But this applies to everything except stationery and writing supplies, weirdly enough. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just said that's very specific.
Yeah, it's a very specific thing, which if you're smart, you can see what we're setting up for. you may already know where this is going. But at this school, it's still kind of the same thing, though. You know, you've got your athletic and wealthy kids, and they're going to always be the ones who succeed, and they're popular. But other kids can sort of find their own unique little niche in eraser collecting. And that's sort of a way, like kids that can collect unique and interesting or rare erasers. Now, that's an interesting thing to kind of just come
it's
up.
An interesting choice to make for the show, honestly, because there could be like card games or any kind of miniature choices, but they specifically choose erasers as like maybe it's like a simple thing they can do for when they're kids, but specific erasers, and they show off like the most amazing eraser in the history of erasers in the scene.
Love like, that. It's so incredible. It's like it sparkles gold. I don't know how.
Yeah. It's literally like gold. It looks like an ornament, like a boat. But also one thing I like about Tanaka is that you see his emotions expressed through his dialogue as he's going back through things, because he'll often be hyperbolic and then rewind himself in the story. It was like, no,
wait a minute, it was this.
Yeah, like
he'll make one point and then rewind back,
yeah,
and then make another point.
I have that really interesting, like, he's just like screw it. I'm gonna, it's like his whole emotion during that, which wasn't like logical.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the things that poor
Knox. It's like he's remembering how worse it was in layers. Like,
yeah.
He remembers like a surface layer of like, yeah, this kind of sucked. No, wait a minute. No, it really freaking sucked. Like, my thing was erasers.
Yeah, that's I didn't find that interesting for this episode. And then eraser.
Yeah, and I have to wonder, like, I would actually have to look it up. I wonder if this is actually a thing that may have been popular in Japan at some point with collecting erasers. Because that does happen among young kids in Japan. They do kind of have a lot of little trinkets and doodads that kids end up collecting and stuff. So I'm wondering if erasers was one of them at about the time that this show is meant to be placed, which I think that this would kind of, like put him at like sort of like the early 2000s or so. I think because I think Tanaka's like 24 or something. But he's kind of like in like him and this other kid named Sato. Like they're kind of like the big eraser kids. And Sato's parents, like you mentioned, they're like rich. And they traveled, so they always get in like these cool, crazy, like erasers. So even though Tanaka has his own little rare eraser, this little blue dodo, it still just pales in comparison. But that little blue dodo means so much to him. And this is also what leads to his love of birds. He comes to really love birds, and his dad eventually gets him a pet bird, a male cockatiel. He names it Maru. And
another adorable pet.
Sorry, it's absolutely adorable. We love Maru. Mm-hmm. We love Maru on this Poodlecast.
Yeah.
But we also kind of learned that his dad kind of only bought him that bird because it was probably the least expensive thing he could get, because he got his brother like a big ass gaming PC and games and shit. It's like,
Dan's probably got a huge PC and he's like gaming and chilling. I mean, like, it's fair. I love a bird too.
Sure.
But at the same time,
it's like you start kind of seeing that Tanaka's home life. Like, I think like we're gonna see some more of that. But this is where we start getting the point that like Tanaka's home life as a child seems kind of. But no matter what he does, he can't compete. Like, it's just, he gets meager popularity, but he's on the internet one day, browsing eBay like you're supposed to, window shopping only like you're supposed to, and he comes across a one-of-a-kind eraser on an auction site. Now, when I saw this one-of-a-kind eraser alarm bell, I'm pretty sure the same happened for you. The alarm bells start going, bing, 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 bing.
That's a very familiar, very rare eraser.
What was that? A rare eraser again? What could it have been?
It might be one that got stuck into Otakawa's pocket in a previous.
So, this eraser has some history. If this guy at present is like 24 and we're seeing something that happened 16 years ago, so this eraser's got some history. So he sees this on the internet, the eBay site, the auction site, and he makes just the best decision ever, and he nabs his dad's credit card information and he places a bid on the eraser, which currently sits at 3,000 yen, which is like $22. We are in very reasonable territory here.
Yeah, if you're gonna, if you're gonna steal from your parents, $22, that ain't nothing.
It's like, it's not good to steal from your parents. I want it to be known that our Poodlecast does not condone stealing from your parents. However, $22, when we look at like this family seemingly a little well-to-do and they got their other kid a gaming PC, I can see maybe, you might be able to slide $22 away.
Absolutely.
So he comes back near the auction's end. I guess this is like a day or two later, and the price has gone up a mere 500 yen. That's like a couple extra bucks. So, he's got to now it's like down to these old eBay, like before snipe bots existed, where you'd get those final moments of an auction and you're just bidding back and forth with somebody down to the last second. And, our boy decides that it's time to escalate, and he starts pushing the price up to like $3,600, $4,600, and then the rival pushes it up to $5,000. And this is a point where I wish I was recording our commentary during this, because me and Toad were losing our minds at this. There was so much secondhand awfulness we were both feeling like, no, dude, stop, stop, stop. You have to stop now.
Oh, I don't even know where to begin. Just seeing him, because You know what's going to happen, and you know how big of a mistake it is. And they just hold you there, too.
Oh, they don't let it go. They keep it going, and it's not done yet. It's not done, because he hears his dad coming home from work, and he starts freaking out, because it's like, these are the last few seconds. This is it. Like, he's coming up the stairs. So he pushes that bid to 10,000 yen. So he is in for 70 bucks now. And at the last second, he just, I don't know what he was thinking. Like, boy is out of his mind. He drops another zero on that sumbitch.
Why?
100,000 yen.
Oh.
Toad, if we were to Google how much that is in dollarinis, what would you say?
I'd say it's over 700 dollarinis.
And he submits that shit. And it's done.
I just straight up.
The deed's done. It's over.
Why? This seriously was painful.
I watch it, like, my heart was racing. There are so many points where he could have just bailed and let the other guy have it. But no, he pushed it. Like, he could have probably gotten off with 10,000. He probably would have been fine. But he pushed that last zero, and he didn't. There was no counter bid. He just did it.
10 times the amount. What are you doing?
So he spends $700 on the eraser. His dad comes in and sees him at his PC, and he gets a fucking black eye for it because, you know, child abuse. Yay.
A bit of a warning about that in this episode.
So I have
a little rough.
So I have some fun trivia that that you would only pick this up if you've studied Japanese a bit, but it's really fun, and I think that it'll help color something for us a little. So the seller is named Ditch 11, because when he says the name, he says Ditchy Ichi Ichi instead of Ditch 11, which is the way that it appears on the screen, obviously. So ditch is a very interesting word here, because there is a word in Japanese that specifically means gutter or ditch. And do you want to know what that word is?
I do.
Dobu.
Ooh.
So there you go. When this is a word that I like known because I have studied Japanese a good bit, but it didn't dobu didn't really jump out at me like in noun form. I just kept thinking of it as guy's name. That's just who dobu is. And then I saw ditch. And I was like, wait a minute. So now I'm wondering if, like, wait, is Dobu actually the seller here?
Oh my god, no way.
Such an interesting thing if he is not the seller.
Yeah.
I would be shocked. But that is such an interesting thing to just kind of put in there for people that are paying attention or people that know. Because it also works in Japanese if, like, the person that's Japanese doesn't understand ditch as an English word. And how that might be, you know, related to dobu. So That's just an interesting little thing that they kind of slide in there that I think is really interesting, that I thought would be a good idea to bring up. That
I appreciate that.
Like, well, now we know something.
It's also interesting for further in this episode.
Is it? Is it?
It is.
So, in the end, our boy, it's been a month. The boy never gets his eraser. His dad finds out and just beats the shit out of him.
Those thumps were harsh too.
Like, he got like one lump, you know, going to school the next day just for being seen at his dad's computer, you know. But this is just like, he is beat to a pulp. Like, mom actually holding the father back in the background, kind of. Oh, this is rough.
And he's sitting there wondering if he's blaming himself, which is like, holy shit.
It's so... This episode is really rough, yo.
It's a tough one.
And this isn't the worst.
No.
This is not the worst. This poor man is... Oh.
Poor Tanaka.
Oh, God. So, years later... He's an adult now, and he's working at a game studio and finds a new game to get into. That's always a good idea, right? He finds a new mobile game to get into. It's an animal collecting game where you can kind of compete with people worldwide and to have, like, the best collection of animals. You might see where this is going. You might see how this may have tied to another very similar collecting incident in his life. And he does good for a bit. He starts playing the game. He's able to just kind of enjoy it as a free game for a while. He wasn't like the highest ranked player in the world, but he, like, seemingly, you know, at that starting phase of having fun with the game.
Yeah, he was also like still mingling with coworkers at that point.
Mm-hmm.
He says hello, and then he's like, he still seems like in a general okay spot too. Like, he's like got good, but like, oh, he's getting through it, you know?
Yeah, like, he's definitely had his lumps, literally.
Yeah.
Not to make a terrible joke out of that, but, you know, look, it's 11 o'clock at night, people.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm blaming Toad for this one.
That's fair. That's
if I'm a little extra spicy this episode, we're blaming Toad.
100%
understandable. But while he's playing the game, he finds out that there's a super rare animal in the game, and it's a dodo. He loves dodos.
He does love dodos. He had the cute little blue one, and the rare one is blue as well.
And the rare one is blue as well. So it's just like this. It's all coming back to haunt him again.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, he just kind of gets obsessed. He starts doing the little thing that you do at the start when you start getting addicted to these games. He starts doing pulls in little 500 yen increments, but like never really gets better. And then the worst part, it all comes crumbling down when he just like starts scrolling up to see who the number one player in the world, Toad. Don't tell me.
Ichi.
It's Ditchy Ichi once again. Damn it, Dobu.
The name comes back. Is it Dobu also playing?
Like,
his
is
game?
Dobu also playing Zuden and just like is like the central pillar to destroying this poor man's life?
Without
even realizing it. It's so terrible. You have to laugh because it's too sad.
Yeah, like it's just it really is too sad. You have to have some kind of humor about this.
Yeah,
when discussing it, because it's this episode is dark.
Because this is the point where he really starts spiraling out of control. Like, you know, like he feels like getting this rare dodo to compete with Ditch 1-1 is how he gets revenge. Like, he warps himself into thinking this is a way of like getting revenge on his younger self, and it's just such an odd mindset to get into. But when you are talking about someone being an addict, it's just that's what this is. And
obsession and addiction.
So that night, like when he finds out that like Ditch 1-1 is the person that he's gunning after, he adds 100,000 yen to the account. So symbolic of the 100,000 that he lost as a kid. And then 4 years later, we find out that he spent 5 million yen. Toad, do you know how many dollars that is? That is so many dollars.
That is at least three, but I'm assuming $5, but also $35,000.
$35,000 on a video game in 5 years. And the thing is, I know people who have done this, and it's just very, like, this episode was a lot more real than I thought it was going to be, especially, like, especially after when I started thinking of a couple of people that I know that did get wrapped up in these games in a really awful way, and ended up just blowing way more money that they ended up regretting so much.
I imagine.
And he tries to, like, justify this in his brain, and like, he can't make it make sense at all. And you get to a point where he's literally just sitting at his PC, and, like, his inner narration is, like, it's just sickness. Like, and it's, that's the saddest moment for me. It's just like, yeah, like, it's the dopamine hit you get. Right when you're playing these games and you get like a rare item or you pull that one character that you wanted, and it's just everything is going back to the past of like where this all started and all of these tendencies and you see where it all started, like with his family, really, and that like the reason that he had to turn to fulfilling his life with, you know, these temporary means or these weird collecting habits and these addictions is because you get the idea this guy just never had a lot of love. This was his only outlet for receiving that hit you get when, like, you have a good time with a friend or you have a good experience with a family member or something. It seems that he's just never had that.
So unbelievably depressing. I can't say I've ever had anything of that, quite that relation, but I can understand where that's coming from.
Right.
I understand hyper-focusing, and I've seen a lot of addiction in my life. It's like they just hit every, like, the sad. And then the good thing about this episode is just how much it just keeps pushing that narrative further. Like, you think he's getting better, and then it just gets worse. And, like, you could just see. Like at this point, especially, like he's really starting to get like frustrated and sad and like
detached from reality.
Yeah,
like you get in the office at this point, like it's a contrast to how it was earlier, where he was talking to his coworkers, you know, seemed decent, but then he's just kind of like yelling and snapping at them out of nowhere when they literally never even talked to him. It's just the dudes. Dude's on a really, really bad way, and it's, guys, it's not finished.
No.
It's not done. So, we're at the point where we start to catch up at the point of episode 3, where he finally pulled the super rare dodo.
Woo!
He did it! Like, it's over, and this is the point where Odakawa literally almost just splatters him all over the place, and he drops his phone on the ground. It bounces and cracks. And you see, like, oh, there's a chance. There's a chance. And then it just rolls over into a goddamn puddle.
Floosh.
Oh.
Floosh. With the dodo on the screen.
With the dodo. He pulled the dodo. He just didn't confirm it or something. Because when he goes to get his phone repaired and he pulls his account back up, the dodo's not there.
Yep, they didn't. Like, I guess you got to confirm it when you get it, or else you don't get it, and it's gone. The camera turns. You see poor Snuck's face.
He's already just so done. He like goes home and just like face down on the couch. Just I'm done. Like I've lost literally everything, and it's just like, not yet, guy.
His shroud. He literally has a shroud over him because he's so lost.
And it's
like he can't shake it. He's so stuck in their own brain, which is something I can absolutely relate to.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's just like he has nothing to show for his effort, and it only gets morbidly worse from here. When he discovers that his pet bird Maru has also passed away. God, man.
This was such a heartbreaking moment.
This was not fun. Like, this was not a fun episode to sit through. This guy just... Oh, it's just torture.
It's
just
poor Tanaka. On a somewhat personal note, the one animal I woke up... the one animal I grew up with was a cockatiel.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And I loved that little birdie. And then seeing this episode, I was just like, oh.
Just kind of throws you right back.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
And then just seeing, like, and then Tanaka, who had a big thing for birds at this point, going and, you know, Maru's, like, the only consistency in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's gone.
Yep, that's it. And
just gone.
So he goes to the little parkish area that looks a little familiar. We might have seen somebody there in a previous episode, but he goes, he puts Maru in a box. He's going to bury him, and he's digging a hole, and he happens to kind of come across another metal box.
Hey.
Oh, he is digging in the same spot where Dobu buried something earlier.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Speaking of Dobu, once again.
Once again, being this man's downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Not even knowing that he did.
Mm-hmm.
He finds Dobu's gun, and he just, all right, this is mine now. And he just starts walking the streets for 3 days, just looking. And the whole time he's mumbling to himself about his bird, the dodo, and he mentions a taxi. He knows a taxi is the reason he lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he bumps into Shibagaki of Homo sapiens. He's like the boar looking dude. And they have this conversation about chasing your dreams. And Shibagaki mentions that, like, there's an amount of luck involved in achieving your dreams and getting the things that you want. And he just kind of misinterprets this in the same way. It's just like, oh, you know, well, it's just like my game. I played the odds for 5 years until I got my bird. So now he's going to walk these damn streets with this gun in a brown bag until he finds the taxi driver he's looking for. Toad, our boy has murderous intent.
Our boy's eyes at this point.
Oh my god, he's nuts!
Are giant. His eyes are wide. His face is dark. He's gone.
At one point, he looks at the camera and smiles, and it looks just like a slime from Dragon Quest. Which I'm wondering if that was an intentional reference.
Oh yeah, that could have been.
But yeah, like that's where the episode ends, and that is just like one of the more unique ways to like there are shows that do this sometimes. Like I watched another show earlier this year called Bang Dream It's My Go, and they stopped the narrative in like the third episode to do an episode that is focused on one character from first person, and that character is autistic. And you experience their life, like, trying to, coming to understand, like, what it's like for an autistic person to try and communicate with the world around them.
Yes.
And this is a similar thing where they stop the narrative to focus on something really interesting and very deep and personal. And this is, like, absolutely a standout episode already. Despite the fact that we've already had 3 great episodes, I think that this episode in particular stands out as an incredibly written piece of fiction.
I can agree with that. It was, it even started out like, oh, we're following another character. Okay, I guess that's okay. You know, we're so interested in what's happening on the last episode, but by the end of this episode,
like, we're there. Like, your heart.
Your heart is gone. Like, it is torn out.
Oh, my God. And this
Tanaka,
guy.
Yeah.
Tanaka has got to be. Like, I don't even know what the rest of this story holds, but how is this guy not one of the most tragic characters of this story? Like,
definitely.
Like, the way his life has been completely upended by all of these awful circumstances, and they all tie back to Dobu!
Dobu! I wonder if that's means Tanaka's gonna, figure something out about Dobu in a little bit.
I'm really wondering at this point, like, if it's ever, like, because if it all comes back to that goddamn eraser, Odakawa has the eraser.
It has to come back to
like,
that eraser.
Like, how is this gonna, like, my brain is just like, how does this spill out? Because you know these two are gonna meet at some point. And you know, like, Tanaka's just gonna be like, oh, well, how best get there? And just pull it out or something. And dude is gonna fucking freak.
I don't even know how he's gonna act. He's gonna see that and, like, something's gonna go in his brain.
Something's gonna pop in that boy's brain.
Yeah, like, bad. And I don't know what the heck is gonna happen.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. So do we have any more thoughts on Tanaka's revolution?
Go look at a cute animal after this episode.
Yeah, go
pet someone, go get a hug.
Yeah, go get a hug. Go hug. If you think you have a friend who may be going through it, you know, drop them a message and say, hey, how you doing? You doing okay over there, friend? You know? Yeah. Just after this episode, you just kind of, you want to go find a friend and give him a hug just to be sure.
Fantastic episode, though.
Generally. Great, great episode. Like I think that this is going to be one of the standout episodes of the series. I think that is going to just leave an impression on us the whole time. But we finally move back to the main story of everything with the next episode, episode 5, Don't Call Me an Idol. And this episode begins with Yamamoto, and it's interesting because we saw him previously. He was following Kakihana at the end of episode 3 when Kakihana was going on a date with Shiho. So So now he's here. So we don't really know what came of that and that polar bear dude that he was with.
They
don't immediately follow up on that. It's just, oh, okay, well, like, Yamamoto, he's on the phone with Mitsuya. She is the Black Cat member of Mystery Kiss, and he's trying to find her because they got practice to do, and he needs a ride. So our boy Odakawa is back in the picture, and they arrive to pick up Mitsuya, but we see an interesting little exchange before she gets into Odakawa's cab. She's at another cab, and she's having an interesting little back and forth with somebody, and we see somebody hand her a cell phone. And it's not hard to tell who gave her that cell phone.
No, it is not. That is absolutely Tanaka's hand handing
so
her that cell phone.
So what the hell is Mitsuya's connection with Tanaka and that she would agree to do this? What in the world? I don't even know. We've never seen these characters together at all.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, Mitsuya is grabbing a phone, and she's grabbing that phone for a very specific purpose. But and we'll get to that in just a second.
Yes. Whoa.
But like, where, like, what is the connection between these two? Like, I cannot even begin to think of, like, how these two are tied together.
Tanaka seems just like a, like, low on their luck individuals at a shit life, and Mitsuya's like a, isn't she like a privileged
She had parents that loved her. She's the one that said like my parents raised me with love. I'm like, well, damn,
she has, like, money and everything, and
what is the connection here? So she gets in.
Yeah.
And Yamamoto gives her an order of fried chicken. I like fried chicken, so I can relate to her being a fried chicken fan. And they have this conversation about fried chicken and soul food. And Mitsuya seems a little down when she mentions that she loves the fried chicken her mom used to make. I don't know if that means, like, maybe her mom's passed away or anything. I don't even know if they're trying to say anything there. But she seemed a little downcast when she was talking about her mom's fried chicken. So then Rui comes up in conversation, and it's just like, well, why does she get preferential treatment? Like, she can be late to practice, but I can't. Like, why are you busting my balls here? No, it doesn't really get an answer to that. And then during the ride, she just out of nowhere, hey, there's a chicken restaurant. And then we see her bury that cell phone that she just got off of Tanaka in between the cushions of the back seat of the cab. So she's, like, planted this phone for what I can only imagine are very nefarious purposes. What are you doing? Like, what? And nobody notices. So they drop her off at the studio, and now they need to go pick up Ichimura at the bathhouse. She is the Calico Cat, for those who don't remember. They pick her up, and then Yamamoto has a gift for her. He gives her some bath bombs, I assume, because she likes being in baths. And Odakawa comments that he feels like he's seen her before. He's immediately suspicious, and it keeps coming up. He can't let it go. This sticks in his craw. I'm like, I know I've seen you. And Yamamoto is just like, oh, well, you probably just saw her when she was performing without a mask. And Odakawa's like, dude, I don't go to concerts. I would never have seen her there. And I know where he saw her, having thought about this.
Oh, really?
Who's she dating right now?
Oh yeah, true.
He saw her on Kakihana's phone. Because he grabbed the phone, remember back in episode 3?
That's right.
Odakawa, they wrestled for the phone and he took it. And he was like, oh, this is the girl, huh?
That's right. Okay.
So there we go. So that's where he knows her from. So Shiho is also notably upset that Rui is receiving preferential treatment. And there's a line that just jumps out at you like a damn... Like, it's... What are you... Are you telling me something here, anime? Are you saying this on purpose? Are you telling me this on purpose? She says very specifically that Rui is incredible. I bet she'd kill someone just to get ahead. In fact, I bet she has. It's like, what?
That is such a wild line. She says it so casually.
So casually. Too. She just like rattles that off. And it just, again, like so many things characters say in this show that I don't know if we're supposed to pick up on it or if the characters, but they just glide right past that shit. They never stop. It's like, I don't know. Does Rui strike you as the type that would kill somebody? Like, maybe? I don't know. So,
ruthless.
And then there's a fun little scene here where, like, she's like, dude, I don't even know why I have this job. Like, what do you need me for? And Yamamoto's like, you got positive qualities. You got a cute face.
And then she's like, yeah, but I wear a mask.
I wear a damn mask. What? It's a fun little gag, and you gotta feel sorry for the girl.
Yeah.
And there's another line that comes up here that goes down a very dark place that, again, it gets cut off, but my brain made some inferences. So she mentions something very specific here about, and I'm really tired of exchanging messages with old dudes.
Uh-huh.
She mentions that being exhausting, and Yamamoto very clearly just cuts that right. He's like, stop. He cuts her off very clear. So I am now very curious. Like, this feels like something sinister may be at play with what's going on with either this group or something at the very least is going on with Shiho, and it may involve prostitution to some degree.
It sounds like
it's either that or it's like, you know, a long con and just trying to you know, scam people out of money, because there is something with money that we're gonna see we'll touch on here in a bit. And it makes me wonder if she's just kind of like a setup girl for this, or if she's actually being prostituted. We don't really know what's going on here, but it's definitely kind of dark. It's definitely darker. Maybe I'm thinking darker than it actually is, but like I do know that like there is like you see it in a lot of Japanese media, and it does happen a lot where like schoolgirls tend to end up in situations where they end up getting pimped out. It is a problem, and she's 18 now, but we don't know how into being 18 she is. So that makes me wonder, like, how long she's been at this, if that was kind of like something that's been going on with her or not. It's just something that, like, when they brought that up, like, that line. So again, I don't know if she's just, like, a setup girl to, like, get people to take out loans that, you know.
Right.
And or if it's, like, something more nefarious, like actual prostitution. So
I know she mentioned earlier that, she was the one who had nobody growing up. So there is some part I could see that she just wants that security.
Sure.
So she wants to go that way into a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only other thing I can really think of.
Yeah,
I
think there could also be something genuine there. Yeah, there could actually be, like, her wanting to rush into things like this could very well be that lack of love, which, you know, we see what that's done with Tanaka, of course. So,
oh, I don't know. Maybe Tanaka and Mitsuya are...
there you go. Like, maybe there's something there. Maybe. So she gets out of the car and she mentions that she doesn't like Mitsuya and that she liked things the way they were before. And again, I don't really know what she means there. I think they're referring to something, like, we're supposed to kind of be inferring here that, like, either the group or she had, like, her own solo career or something, or maybe they didn't have to perform with masks before.
Right.
It's something like that. Like, there's something weird there. So she doesn't like the black cat girl for some reason, too. So very, very interesting dynamics at play. So after this, Yamamoto directs Otakawa to drive him to his office. And we cut to the interior of another taxi that's been following Otakawa. And in the back seat, we find that a crazy-eyed Tanaka is this other taxi driver's passenger. That's there. You start getting the bad feels already. Y'all already know something's a coming. And so Otakawa and Yamamoto ride on, and Yamamoto mentions kind of like what we were thinking last time, that all right, Rui is like the diamond of this group. Like, everybody else in the group is around to just kind of like prop her up for her to have like an eventual solo career, basically.
Right.
That's the kind of thing that's going on here. The other girls really don't matter much. Like, one of them obviously knows she doesn't. So we get now that, like, Yamamoto is very clearly trying to make Rui a star. And it doesn't really give much of a crap about the others. It also keeps using the term carbon gemstone, which drives Otakawa up the wall. He's like, dude, just say diamond. Just say diamond.
He does get annoyed. I'm like,
he gets very annoyed. I love the very specific. Like, Otakawa is such a fun character because there are those little things where there's these very specific weird things that annoy the crap out of him.
He's still the most relatable person.
Absolutely.
Maybe. On the planet.
Absolutely. I've never related more to a walrus in my life. So that taxi from before still following Otakawa and Yamamoto. So Yamamoto asks for Otakawa's business card. Now, this is interesting because we'll find out in a moment. But he wants to pull Otakawa in because, like, look, I want a steady driver for these girls because, you know, I'm hauling around idols. They're going to be famous. Like, we need, like, somebody that can, you know, be dependable. So Otakawa asks him, like, what office he works at. And he mentions that he's actually kind of, like, he's driven a girl to this very same area 2 weeks ago. And he's like, maybe that was your agency. Like, are you sure I haven't been here before? And Yamamoto asks, like, well, maybe it was Shiho, you know. Like, it could, you know, it could have been. And Otakawa mentions, again, I'm going to bring this up again because this is very important, I think. Otakawa's like, no, like, she's a calico cat. The girl I drove here was a little different. And that's one more instance of Otakawa mentioning someone's species, and I don't think we've ever seen anybody else in this show mention somebody's species.
once.
So,
I think in episode 6, not to this point, I don't think.
Yeah, we'll... Go ahead.
This specific part is interesting because he does again, but Yamamoto's reaction is kind of like, huh? Like when he says that, because he's like, what? Calico cat?
Calico? Yeah, again, the look on his face is just like, what are you talking about, guy?
Seems like he just doesn't understand.
When he mentioned, you know, you're the only alpaca I've seen around here, Shirakawa's reaction was kind of like a blank stare, and then she just started laughing. So it's like, again, we're glossing past things that it's just like, is that important? Is that important? Is that? Mm-hmm. Am I sitting here literally looking at every line in this script going, is that important? Is that important?
It's kind of that way. The dialogue between characters in the show is so layered.
It stays so layered and fascinating that you never know if what somebody is saying is a clue to something or if they're just, you know, we're just having a conversation, my guy. It's not that deep.
Yeah.
So when they finally arrive, Yamamoto asks if Odakawa is absolutely sure this is the place where he dropped off another girl. And Odakawa's like, yeah, I'm absolutely sure I've been here before. And then there's this very weird pause, and he looks at Odakawa's business card. And I think this is a point where, there in episode 2, when we first saw Yamamoto, he was on the phone with somebody when he was having that meeting with Rui after they sent the other two girls outside to sell merch when he and Rui went to the back room.
Okay.
He got a phone call, and it was somebody asking about a taxi driver.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
So he gets, and they mention his name. They mention it is a taxi driver named Odakawa.
Oh.
So he gets Odakawa's business card, and this is very likely that he knows who, this is the taxi driver that Yamamoto's actually been looking for, and he didn't even realize it.
Oh.
So at this point, this makes the next part make sense, where Yamamoto starts asking for the onboard. He asks if there's an onboard recording device because, I want like some footage to make a preview video for the band, get him in a more candid setting, you know, and and Odakawa is like, yeah, I'll sell you that data of the two girls that were just here. But Yamamoto is very insistent that he wants all of the dash cam data. So the dash cam data. So again, the dash cam data, he was told very clearly, if somebody comes asking for that dash cam data, you're not given that goddamn dash cam data. So Odakawa says, all right, I'll try to settle it up with privacy matters and stuff, but I can't make you any promises. And then without incident, Yamamoto lets him go. But this is very clearly an interesting thing to have happened, because now Yamamoto knows who this dude is. And we can only assume that Yamamoto is talking to either the taper, the black taper that hangs out in the sauna all the time, or the other name that keeps coming up, Yano.
Yano.
One or the other. Because Yano was Dobu's junior, the dude that trying to get more money.
Right.
It's a guy we know only in name so far, but he either works for one of those two. That's the only thing I can think. So Odakawa drives home. Been a long night. he heads home and heads inside, and not too much later, the other taxi that Tanaka is in pulls up. And this is where we start to notice, that phone that Mitsuya slipped into the back seat, he was using, a tracking device or an app to track that. So he now knows where Odakawa lives.
That is a frightening thought.
That is very, very scary.
Oh, Tanaka is already off the deep end. All we know is that he's going around with this gun. We don't even know what he's doing in this situation, so this is a little further ahead. Or, what the heck is Mitsuya doing with this? What? So, yeah.
It's so absolutely just bananas, the things that they're setting up here, and oh cool, one more thing I need to sit here and be nervous about while watching this damn cartoon. So we cut to Odakawa. He's having a late night visit at Gariki's clinic. Good thing, hey, we find out Gariki's fine. He disappeared last episode, and we didn't know why. But it turns out that he just kind of ducked out of work for a bit because he's going to be closing the clinic for a while. He's had some medication that's turned up missing, and he needs to protect himself because that could easily come back on you looking like a distributor. So he's shutting his shit down, and like he's not prescribing anybody anything for a while. He's got to get his business in order. And, you know, he says, you know, I'm doing it because I got to protect myself. And Odakawa is just like, I don't know. I think you might be doing it to protect Shirakawa. And it's like, oh.
Ooh, Odakawa not holding back.
No.
Fist up, boy.
Because unbeknownst to us, he had apparently seen Shirakawa meeting with Dobu in an alley, and he just put two and two together. And so, like, that's kind of the end of that. It's just we find out that Gariki's going to have to close his clinic, and this is the confirmation, basically, you know, third party that, yes, like, Shirakawa was the one stealing the medications. She's been very busy. She stole 6,000 pills. That is, that is not an insignificant amount of drugs.
6,000 pills is a hell of a lot. And how long has she been stealing all this?
Good Lord. Like, how long has she been working there versus how long? Like it makes me think that she was probably put there to steal in the first place. Given what we will come to find out to know about Dobu and Shirakawa. So he's got, like, Odakawa's got somewhere else to be tonight. He's got somebody else to meet. And hey, speaking of. It's our boy Dobu.
Dobu's back.
Dobu's back, ruining lives and not even knowing it.
Well, he might know.
I mean, he knows of at least one that he's definitely working on a ruin. So, on the ride, like, Odakawa asks directly, like, if he and Shirakawa are connected. And, like, Odakawa's just like, I think that she's the one stealing the medication and you sell them. And that he put Shirakawa up to approaching him. Like, so he's even suspicious of, like, her intentions toward him. Like, she thinks that this is just all a setup, like, Dobu set up everything. And he confirms that, like, yes, they do steal the medication and sell them. But she approached Odakawa on her own. Like I didn't tell her to do that. Like, that's all her and you, dog. So, I mean, that's good, right? Like, you know.
The dance in the park meant something.
Yeah.
You understand that was...
She showed you her based capoeira moves, dude. So... Dobu mentions during this conversation that, like, he's the one that's actually taking on Shirakawa's supposed debt, and that she pays it back through him. And he also mentions that this is very important because I think that this starts tying some things together. Dobu mentions in this conversation that he messed up recently and lost something important that his boss gave him. Now, what would we know if we're making assumptions of who the boss might be at this point? What very special item that his name keeps coming up attached to might he have lost recently?
It was a neat little eraser.
Yeah, you bet your ass it was an eraser.
Lost recently.
Yep. And then afterward, Dobu threatens to kill Odakawa if he doesn't tell. He's trying to find out now. I was like, all right, I know somebody asked you for your dash cam footage. Who was it? And obviously he doesn't want to tell him, but then Dobu threatens to kill him if he doesn't. And he threatens to kill him in a very specific way. He threatens to tie up his arms and legs and throw him in an empty tub and slowly fill it with water.
Horrifying.
That's
what you're talking to.
I have another connection to make here.
Oh.
I feel this almost feels like it could be tied to the very opening shot of the show with a body being bound by its hands and legs and tossed into a body of water.
I did forget about that.
I don't know if that's anything, but that I just kind of put those that like I just kind of tied those two things together. And it's just I don't know if it means anything or if they're just kind of tastefully calling back to that to kind of remind us of that or what. But I thought that him having that very specific. Yeah, he mentions, like, I know very specific ways to bother people, and I'm going to tell you exactly how I'd kill you. And he brings up this exact, you know, form of death.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't know, that seems maybe.
It's very specific, like a lot of things, god dang it.
Yeah. So Odakawa finally tells him that it was Mystery Kiss's manager, and then Dobu is kind of immediately caught off guard by that, because he's just like, well, that means Yano's involved, and if Yano is involved with Yamamoto, like, I can't touch that. Like, I can't do anything about that. So there's something clearly going on here where, like, Dobu cannot interact in a way that would be against Yano. It sounds like they're all under kind of like the same mob here, and they can't go against one another, but they're all doing their own shit.
Yeah, very much so.
And also, I just popped into my brain. So, like, if Yano, like, we know that he's been mentioned as, like, oh, he wants to get all the money. Like, he wants to, because they work as, you know, collecting money for their boss, and he wants to get all the money because obviously he wants to, you know, appear superior. That makes me wonder, like, since he's mentioned in being involved with Mystery Kiss, does that mean that, like, him like possibly pimping out Ichimura is also like he's tied to that somehow.
That's true. That's very true. Do we actually know anything about Mitsuya really? Like at all?
Not at all. Like Mitsuya, okay. Like she, like we know that Mitsuya likes fried chicken. We know
I'm
that
with her there.
We know that her parents raised her with love.
That's good.
And we know that she has some kind of connection with Tanaka. But as far as anything else,
okay.
Like I feel like we've gotten more out of Shiho than we have Mitsuya. So
yes.
So after this, like Dobu's kind of worried about like there's a new video that has apparently gone viral of someone that's claiming they're gonna catch him. And it's gotten over 10 million views already, so he's starting to sweat that out a little bit. But yeah. So 10 million views. It sounds like somebody may have done a very good job of going viral.
I think somebody's going. I think somebody has gone viral.
Somebody
I should
has
say.
Gone. So. We don't get much further in that conversation. We switch scenes to a very expensive-looking restaurant. We find Kakihana. He's doing his best to really look like he belongs here.
Oh, he's certainly trying.
He's got all the right social cues for a fancy restaurant, right? Like, not a.
Oh yeah,
that's an adequate.
Oh my god.
Got a double snort out of that one. That's how bad Kakihana's performance here is. And so like he's playing up how rich he is, and like she mentions, oh, I feel the happiest when I'm in a bath, because when I was a kid, the only time I could be alone was when I was in a bath. And he's like, well, I've got a bath that's got a TV and jets and hookers and cocaine.
Yeah, he plays himself up pretty hard.
Oh,
here.
And she's just like, oh, you should really have me over to visit sometime. And she makes a point here. To be very upfront in that she wants to get married the sooner the better. And I'm wondering if this is like either it's part of the game and that this is what she's trying to do, or if this is legitimately like a way for her to try and get away from Yano / Yamamoto or something.
To avoid being pimped out or whatnot.
Yeah, like, I'm wondering if this is... Or it could also be a means of her getting out of the idol industry, because you cannot be married and be an idol. Because they can't have boyfriends, they have to remain pure. So I'm wondering if, like, her desperation to get married is either because she's actually a gold digger, if she's be if she, again, this is all just a setup. And there's so many questions that kind of come from this, literally everything else. And then Cocky Han is literally just about to just throw it out there. He's literally just about to ask her to marry him. And then she's like, check out this thing on my phone. And then it's like, you remember those lottery numbers? Remember those dumbass lottery numbers that Odakawa just looked at his phone?
Just random-ass lottery numbers?
Just random-ass numbers. Our boy literally won the lottery.
He won the whole flipping lottery.
He won 1 billion yen, which is $7 million. And Shiho is very noticeably bummed out about this because she mentions, he's a Rui fan. Oh, she's not happy about that.
Yeah, that's true. That is rather gold digger behavior.
Yeah. So, like, there's so many ways. But, yeah, Skunk Boy wins the lottery. He's a millionaire now. A billionaire. He is part of the upper crust. He made his promise that he was going to go from being a waiter to making sure that he bought all of the Mystery Kiss merch he could.
Rui merch.
He's going to be the one to push her to the stratosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So then she pulls up the viral video. And of course, it is our boy Taichi Kamisawa from the first episode. The very first client. Mr. Viral himself. And he's going on this tirade about how he's going to be the one to bring known criminal Dobu to justice.
This is unhinged, by the way. Like,
his performance in this video is insane. He is calling himself a god that is going to bring retribution onto Dobu.
Like, he's focusing all his hatred onto Dobu. It's like, no wonder Dobu's fucking scared.
Like, Dobu's just like, this motherfucker's out here putting my name out. It, like, my name is now out here in a 10 million view video, dude.
Yeah.
How comfortable does he have to be now? Oh, it's so good. The episode ends with, Cocky Han gets the check, and he's just like, oh my god, that's so much money. And he pulls the money out of his pocket, and it's just money, and she's like, what, you don't use a card? You don't have a wallet? I gave my wallet to some poor guy on the way here. But as he pulls his money out, oh no, he pulls his money out, and then a receipt for a 100,000 yen loan slips out of his pocket. Uh-oh. Oh, that's so rough. That's so rough.
What are you doing, Cocky Han? Don't do this.
Oh, it's just like he is so all in on this girl he doesn't even know. He's doing it. This is just to impress her at a restaurant. Dude, if you're just like trying to get laid, there are less expensive ways to go about it.
Yes, very much.
My god, Cocky Han is just making, he's making a lot of decisions.
Choices are being made. Many of them.
He is capable of making choices. We know that. So, any final thoughts on episode 5?
Poodle.
We didn't see our adorable little poodle. We haven't seen her in a while.
No, Rui hasn't been around. But a very, very interesting episode with starting out with freaking Tanaka and Mitsuya with some weird connection.
What's going on there? Like, why did she set him up? Like, what was it that... I really want them to go into that connection because there's just been nothing that we've seen from either of the two of them so far that would tie them together. Like, I thought, like, oh, well, maybe she, like, worked at the game company or something that he worked at. But she's only she's only 18. He's, like, 24.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, and he'd worked at that game company for, like, 4 years. So, I don't think it's that, like, I just don't know, like, what their connection's going to be. But it's probably going to blow our minds.
I'm sure it will. I'm genuinely excited. And, like... This episode kind of opened up how kind of shady pretty much everybody is in the show.
You start seeing everybody's dark side come out, and I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, is that, like, you know, like, everybody's kind of like no, but there are no innocents here. It's more gray than it is black and white, and I think that may be something they're going for here. Is it like, yeah, like, there may be good people here, but good people are capable of doing bad things, you know? Like, Shirakawa is obviously a good example of that, in that she seems on the outside like a good person. She seems, you know, like she just wants to do the right thing, but circumstances have led her down a path that have obviously put her in a situation that makes her have to do things that she's not so happy about doing. So it makes me wonder if they're going to be playing on that, the black and white versus just morally gray.
Right, right. I think it will maintain morally gray, because I just think humans, as in general, since the show plays so much off of human interaction, as humans are mostly morally gray in a lot of areas.
Mm-hmm. Like, there, I don't think that there is one person on this planet that is 100% good. Like, we all got some shit, probably, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, exactly. The show is, like, putting out.
I've pirated video games.
You wouldn't pirate a car, would you?
I would pirate a Tesla just to crash it. Which wouldn't take much effort, though, you know, given the fact...
I feel like you trying to steal it, it would just blow up trying to steal the damn thing.
Given that every Cybertruck I've ever seen, I've seen two of them in real life, and both times they were on the back of a tow truck. So, I don't know. I don't think I'd have to do much.
That's fantastic. Holy crap.
All right, then. So, I guess that means we can move on to episode 6, which I think this is one of the most apt episode titles ever. I think it's like, yeah, it sums up the series. Let me hear you say, what the hell?
What the hell?
What in the hell? So...
this wild. All right.
So this episode starts with Odakawa being flagged down by our boy Shun. He won the lottery. He's very excited. He's happy to see Odakawa. Like, he's just really... oh, it's so fun how thankful and excited he is to see Odakawa. Because it's just like, you know, it was his dumb luck. It got him the lottery numbers. And Odakawa just, like... he's just, like, so unimpressed. He's just like... yeah, dude, I just picked him at random. It's really not a big deal. Don't worry about it. You ain't gotta thank me for nothing.
Shun wants to do so many nice things for him all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's actually really nice how nice Shun is trying to be here. Like, he's just like, look, dude, like, you're the reason I am a millionaire. Let me do something. And I think there's one key thing here to point out. I can't remember if I put this in your notes or not. I might have forgotten. Shun mentions that he's won the lottery, but he has not claimed that prize yet.
Oh.
But he has definitely...
I do remember that, yeah.
He has definitely published online. He has publicized that he has won a significant amount of money.
Yeah, it's in... mind you... there's dash cam footage here.
Dash cam footage as well. But more specifically, he has said, when Shiho was on the date with Kakihana, she's the one that showed him his phone and his Twitter account saying, I won billion yen. This guy, I think, I don't even know who Yano is, but Yano's after this guy now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Shun is in trouble. That lottery ticket, I'm wondering if that lottery ticket's ever going to get paid out.
I wonder. I think it might be. I don't know if it'll be by Shun.
I don't know if Shun's gonna be the one. But Shun is just—he's so over the moon. He wants to do something really nice for Odakawa. He even mentions, like, "Dude, do you like know anybody that's struggling financially?" And there's like even like an actual shot of Shirakawa. Like, right there.
and
Odakawa's just like,
nope. That was so great.
It's like, damn, dude. But I guess, you know, he just doesn't want to do it the easy. It's like, I don't know how to interpret that, whether it's just like he's just so done with her at this point.
Because yeah, I think he's still at this point. I think he's still upset with her, and he thinks she's
being
doing
used,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, like he could have. Yeah, I wasn't sure if like he was still angry at that point, or if he was just like, I don't want to take the easy way to do it if I'm going to help her. But yeah, right. I think I'm more in line than with your line of thinking, seeing as this was not that long ago. They literally just had this conversation with Dobu, where Dobu kind of spilled the beans on everything. So, absolutely, probably angry. And so unfortunate that she's not gonna get the quick bailout here, but Shun is just real adamant, like, dude, I work at a cabaret club. It's a hostess club. I'm gonna get you some girls. Let's get you over your alpaca blues. And they go to the club, and Odakawa is just so uninterested. Like, he's got him like MVP treatment. He's got like he is flanked by four cute girls, and they're just like, they're so into him, and like, he's just like, dude, I'd just rather be driving if it's all the same to you.
Yeah, he wants nothing to do with it.
Nothing at all, dude.
Oh, Nikala.
You gotta live a little.
Yeah, I agree.
And so he goes to the bathroom by himself. He just wants to get away from all this. Like, and then, oh boy. And then we cut to a really good scene of our boy Kakihana, who is continuing to make very good very good decisions. Toadies. He's looking at engagement rings now.
He's looking at rings. He's in a damn jewelry store.
What are you doing, my guy? You've literally seen her twice. They met in the rain, like, that one night, and where like where Yamamoto and the polar bear like were tailing them. So I think that was one date, and then I think they went to the fancy restaurant the next time. So I think they.
Okay.
This guy hasn't even seen titty yet, and.
And he's already getting that proposal ring.
He's getting the ring. He's looking at engagement.
You gotta see the titties first.
You ain't even seen titty yet, my guy. Kakihana, this guy is going down a road that is just, oh god.
It's not good.
Everybody's spiraling. Good. Everybody's spiraling.
Real fast too, like real fast.
So, back in the bathroom, Odakawa, he checks his phone, and he's got a bunch of missed calls from Shirakawa, because he had sent her a message that's like, hey, leave me alone, I don't want to talk to you anymore, and she is like blowing up his spot, trying to get a hold of him, like, and he's just letting, he's got that bitch on read now.
No one, none of your shit no more, Shirakawa. You know, you haven't had any chance to explain anything.
Yeah, right? Like,
fuck
come
you.
On. Just done. I'm just over it. And I think that this says something very... I've got a point that I want to make later, and I think that this reaction to her and that, like, him just blowing her off and, like, I want to excommunicate you from my life at this point. I think that this says something about his nature. I think there's something here that I'll bring up. There's a point later where I want to bring it up. So we'll put a little pin in that. And then at that moment that he's looking at his phone, a gunshot rings out. And we know who has a gun.
There's only one person we know that's got a gun right now. Wide-eyed individual.
Wide-eyed individual. We get this shot of Tanaka. He is standing on a table. Gun is pointed into the air. He's wearing a very cool skull mask.
It is a pretty cool skull mask.
It's really cool. Like, if he's gonna go, if he's gonna go full psycho killer, he has chosen a very good wardrobe. I gotta give the man credit. He's he didn't have a lot to work with, but he made it work.
He got the one piece that brought it together.
Yeah, like, that's the thing that brought it all together. Just pulling up the hood wouldn't have done it. It wouldn't have been. No, you got the mask, though, and it's like, all right. Kudos to...
Fucker means serious business.
Kudos to the Halloween shop that got you that skull mask, because it's real cool looking. It's real cool looking.
Oh, hell yeah.
I would wear it. So everybody's rushing out of the club. It's a shooting in a club, and then Shun rushes into the bathroom, and he's like, "Dude, you don't want to go out there right now. Somebody's got a gun." So he helps Odakawa slip out the back. Again, like, the fact that he's just really got Odakawa's back here is really kind of incredible, because this is a situation where I feel like if somebody's in a club with a gun, maybe a lot of people are going to be all for themselves. And Shun runs in, and, like, I have to think that it's still, like, due to him being so thankful to Odakawa for, helping change his life in such a meaningful way. He's like, "Dude, I'm going to get you out of here." And he gets him out.
He gets his back. Shun is, so like, cool. The most genuinely, like, kind person.
Yeah,
so
he actually seems like a nice dude. I'm waiting for some awful shit to come up later, because it's this show, and nobody's getting out clean.
Go ahead. He may be the first to die.
God, it wouldn't shock me.
For that ticket?
Oh, shit! Yep!
I think he might be the first one to get killed.
Somebody about to get popped.
Oh, we'll see, though.
So Tanaka catches a glimpse of Odakawa sneaking out the back, though, but he's stopped by Shibagaki, because Shibagaki apparently works at the hostess club part-time.
Shibagaki loves running into Tanaka. I know that much.
Yeah, that's a very interesting... very interesting thing to happen there. And like, Shibagaki, like, he kind of understands what's happening, and, like, he tries to confuse him, but he's just like, he's just saying bullshit. Like, "What are you trying to do? Start a one-man riot?" It's like, "What are you doing, dude?"
Shibagaki being selfless right now.
Yeah, like, he actually seems to be, doing something good, trying to actually help. Like, go you, dude. So Odakawa is making his escape, and then we hear another shot come from inside the club, and it's like, at this point, I thought, oh, well, there's our first death. I thought he actually just capped Shibagaki. Yeah. I thought that was it.
I thought so as well, genuinely. I was like, oh, God.
And, like, Odakawa has this moment where he stops, and he looks back like he's going to run in, and it's just like, yeah, you know what, fuck it. And just books it. And just books it for his cap.
He said, "I ain't dealing with this shit.
You know, I got enough on my plate. I've already got the Yakuza breathing down my neck about a girl that's missing that I may have. I don't know." God,
yeah, the overarching beginning of the story that's, like, just still there.
There's so little about the missing girl in this run of episodes that you almost forget about it.
They're being lulled into a false sense.
Right? Again, I don't know whether we're giving this show too much credit or we're seeing, like, smoke where there ain't any fire, but everything this show does feels like an intentional move, right?
It does. It does. Just for how well it all comes together. The dialogue feels so well that it does feel that way.
Yeah,
so
it feels like it's all there to be, like you are supposed to, like, watch this a couple of times to catch the little nuances. So it's like, that's, like, why, like, going back through and watching it again to take notes for the show has been very eye-opening for me, because it's just like, but it's also sent my brain into hyperactive mode where it's like, does that mean something? Does that mean something? That has to mean something.
Yeah,
why
did
he say it like that?
That's a vest of mysteries, though. Like, you want to be on that edge, and this show just has you.
Yeah, it's so high octane with it, too. It is never slowing down.
God, no. If only it just ramps up more.
Yeah, it just goes more insane. So we flashed it back in the club, and thankfully, our boy Shibagaki didn't get shot, but he did get shot at, like, he shot at, like, just over his head, and then Shun rushes to his aid. It's like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And his response is, I just thought it would be funny if I got shot.
Oh God!
And it's like, and I think that's gotta be just like, just so he can have something to talk about on his radio show.
Yeah, I genuinely think it was like to make it interesting, and it's just so sad as well.
Oh, Shibagaki, no!
He's struggling. He puts all that effort into it, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
When he first ran into Tanaka, he was like, "I, you know, if it was easy, it wouldn't be a journey. Mm-hmm. You know, it might all be luck." And where Tanaka took it, obviously, another way.
Totally
He's
different direction.
Like, dedicated, and then to be at this point to see him at this low, it's just like, oh man, not again.
Poor guy. So when Odakawa gets out to the parking lot, he also finds out that his back window has been busted out. So I'm wondering, like, they didn't show this, so I don't know if they did or not, but like, I don't know if like they mentioned later that nothing was stolen, but I don't know whether they mean nothing that he knows about was stolen, because I wonder if like
this, the phone.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe like he busted out the window to get the phone back.
That's
what I think. We don't know though, because they've never shown the back seat and it's never come up again. But that's what I think. I don't think that it was meant to just be a sign. I mean, it could have also just been meant to be like, I'm just gonna fuck with you. I'm going to fucking put out your window. You know,
that's true. That's very true. But I think the phone's on point there. That makes a lot of sense, especially for the location of which window
was
broken.
Yeah, it was the back window. Like like why wouldn't you just bust out the front window or the windshield or something? Mm-hmm. So going specifically for the back window does make me wonder if that phone is going to come into play again at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back. Odakawa finally gets back to his place, and who should be waiting on his front porch? It's our girl. It's our girl.
Oh, Shirakawa, welcome back.
I love this scene because he just tries to ignore her. He just is like, nope, I'm just not going to pay. And she just starts yelling, he's ignoring me.
Odakawa is ignoring me.
She's so spunky. I love how spunky she is.
Oh,
she's
God,
just
yes.
like
she's fantastic. I love her.
She's a great character, and he's just like, fine, fine. You're gonna wake up the neighbors. Like, we can talk outside. Yeah. And then we get this flash into the interior of his house again, with like the sliding door, where we thought maybe a person is, but that sliding door is just slightly ajar. And Shirakawa asks, like, well, is there someone in there? And again, gloss right past it.
Uh-huh. It's also a very specific question, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she asks if someone is inside.
In there, not like, why? Like, she would know that he's probably upset with her for some reason, not trying to hide something. Thank you.
That just, again, it's one of those things where, like, when you think about why was it worded that way, why would she ask that? Why would she ask if someone's in there? Like, that's not like a question you ask when you go, like, we're at someone's place and, like, you know, you don't want to go in. Like, you'd usually, well, why don't you want me to come in? I figured that would be it, not like, well, someone in there. It's a very interesting out of pocket question.
The cutaway to the inside there too is so like right as she asks it, and it shows that it's like,
it's slightly open.
It reminds you, like, remember this part of the plot 5 years ago in the first episode?
Welcome back to the main plot. Welcome back to the main plot, Mystery Girl. You're relevant again.
Yeah, I can't wait to figure out who the heck you are.
Who you are and, like, what's your deal?
Yeah, God, yeah.
So, Shirakawa and Odakawa, they go to the park where, and she warns him, you know, you need to get your window fixed because, like, things that get broken tend to get more broken, like broken hearts.
Oh.
And he's just like, he just insists, like, why do you keep talking to me? Like, why are you still around me? And it's really sad. And he admits that, like, he was, like, really happy to, like, have her attention. And that now he just feels ashamed and taken advantage of. And it's so sad because he's just so matter of fact about it. And it just, he doesn't even sound like hurt. He just sounds like, this just happens to me. This is just what I deal with. Like, why are you doing this to me? It's just so
Yeah.
A sad little moment.
Onokawa is a little bit sad. Like, his character is clearly holding on to something heavy, as we're seeing.
Absolutely.
Throughout the first few episodes. So him being so crass and casual about telling her, when he clearly has a lot of interest in her.
Yeah, he does. We will find out that he still very clearly has a thing for her. Like, it's not... You don't get over that real quick, I don't think.
Yeah, and it's just... It's upsetting. Because, you know, he wants it, but he's so blinded by his own... I guess his own brain, kind of.
Like, yeah, like, your brain could be your worst enemy in these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm. And it's sad.
Yep. So this is where we kind of go into her backstory, and as it has kind of been confirmed that she begins by explaining that she and Dobu had dated for 4 years. And this is kind of where we find out the kind of relationship she ended up in. And this is also something that's very common. This goes back to the thing that typically happens to high school girls where they end up in debt to someone. She ends up at a point where she borrowed a large sum of money from him, and she's paying him back little by little. But she didn't realize that she's in the middle of a loan scheme, and like she's basically going to be in debt to him forever. Like, this is a debt you never get out of because the interest just keeps going up. And that's the kind of thing that like he's trapped her in. And she owes him 3 million. She still owes him 3 million yen after all this time. And she's apparently been paying that for 4 years.
Dobu's a jerk.
Yeah, Dobu kind of freaking sucks. this guy is just all in the ruining lives business. So Onokawa kind of asks her again, like, why she approached him. And she confirms that it was Dobu that told her to get close to him. But she kind of insists that, like, her feelings became genuine over time. Like, she actually does... like him. So even the fact that like she like Dobu wanted her to get close to him for some reason, like she's like, but I really do like you. Like, and he's still not there. Like, he even says at one point, look, if you're gonna cry, I'm just gonna leave. I don't want to hear any of this. Like, you either talk about what you need to talk about or I'm going home. Like, he's just still not having any, like, he's not letting her in. Like, he's not gonna let himself get hurt again. Understandable.
Very closed off.
So Onokawa asks, like, well, like, what's Dobu's fucking goal here? And she's like, he wants to rob a bank. And the reason that they singled out Onokawa because they found him through the roster of patients at Gariki's clinic. He's like, well, he's a taxi driver, so I need a getaway driver. I need a fall guy.
Right.
And she says that even though Dobu did ask to like rope him in, she had no intention of ever letting him like get involved in that. So I don't know how you prove that, but that's something she mentions, that like, I gave him your name, but I would never have let him pull you into that.
Right. That's still rough.
Yeah,
Kind of right about not, you know, being a little.
Yeah, you gotta, you know,
defensive.
Yeah, like, you're gonna have to do more than you know, a couple fancy capoeira kicks to win this boy's heart back. So Onokawa then tells her to not tell tell Dobu that these two talked at all. And that at some point he may even actually pretend to help Dobu rob a bank. Okay.
I like that he says pretend.
Yeah,
like...
pretend to rob a bank.
Okay.
And then, like, Dobu kind of, like, Onokawa, like, he chastises her for getting involved in this way. And then she admits then that, like, Dobu would beat her if she didn't. And like the reason that she kept going back and the reason that she stayed with him for so long is obviously like battered wife syndrome, where she feels like she can't leave.
Right.
And as Onokawa kind of gets up to leave, she insists that she only told him the truth tonight. Everything she said was true, and that she wants to pay off her debt and be able to leave Dobu. And she leaves Odakawa. He tells her to again never get involved with me again. Even after finding out all of this stuff, you know, he's still just like, look, just stay the hell away from me. Like, I don't want any more to do with this.
He's just too tired.
Yeah, like literally, the man can't sleep. He forgot how.
That's God, poor Odakawa.
So Odakawa, poor everybody, I think is what we're going to be feeling by the end of this
one. Yeah, seriously.
So Odakawa gets his window fixed the next morning, and then on the radio, we hear Shibagaki going over the details of the shooting. He's making himself sound a little cooler than he might have come off in that situation. But he also goes on a very relevant tirade about the nature of comedy these days and how it used to be okay to make fun of one person to make 10 people laugh. Now comedy's all soft and woke.
Yeah, I got woke.
They literally have a "why is comedy woke now" character.
Oh my god!
And Baba is of course like, no, I think that like comedy that makes fun of people and is punching down is it's just not where people are at these days. Nobody wants to go to a show and be made feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
So it's just like, and given the fact that we know that Baba is starting to kind of experience some success here, I think they were starting, you're seeing that kind of like, that's kind of the way the world's going, where like Shibagaki is kind of like starting to fall behind, whereas Baba is the one that's starting to get opportunities, you know, because it's kind of, that's sort of like how I see it, is that like, you know, Baba's continuing to move forward because he's with the times, like he's... You know, whereas Shibagaki seems kind of stuck in...
A little boomer comedy.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's also a throwaway line Shibagaki mentions here, that there's a high school fan that used to write their show they haven't heard from in a while that we may see something from here in a moment or two. But we also get more shots of Kakihana making some real awful decisions. So
Kakihana once again,
he's
the second time this fucking episode making great choices.
He's taken out another loan from Taco Taco Loans, which I feel is probably involved with Yano / Yamamoto / Dobu / probably the Black Taper. And we see him then gambling at a pachinko parlor after getting that loan.
Ugh.
Kakihana, my god.
Kakihana.
What are you doing?
It's just like a Tanaka thing from earlier. It's like the same thing, dingus.
It's the same thing. We got two characters that are just spiraling in terrible ways.
So fast. Ugh. Double loans.
Oh God! He's already in for 100,000, and it's just like God knows what he's getting after that. Jeez. So after this, Shibagaki and Baba, they leave the studio where they do their broadcast, and Baba gets mobbed by screaming fangirls, and poor Shibagaki just like heads off on his own. He takes sad walk to a cab.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. No, I just said boomer humor's not where it's at.
Boomer humor and ain't where it's at. But before he can get into his cab, he's stopped by an overzealous giraffe boy. And the giraffe boy is cracked out of his mind. His eyes are bloodshot. He's like, no, dude, you're right. Fuck woke comedy, dude. It sucks.
I didn't even pick that up the first time. It's absolutely, I mean, I know they were super aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, holy moly.
Like, what are you doing, my guy? And Shibagaki is just like, dude, get out of my face. I don't give a damn what you think. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
And then the guy just yells at the taxi that his name is Satoshi Nagashima. So That's going to probably be important at some point, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Name dropping.
You don't drop your name like that for no reason.
cracked out giraffe.
Cracked out giraffe, motherfucker. So, then we cut to another viral video by Taichi, and this time he's reporting on the shooting that happened at the cabaret club, which he just immediately attributes to Nobu.
Of course, it's always Nobu's fault.
And I think it's interesting here that the footage was sent to him. They sent the footage to him instead of like news outlets. So there's really something to like the following that Taichi is starting to get. Like, this is actually starting to get, like, Nobu is actually going to be, like, a wanted man here. Like, there are people probably, like, he's probably in more danger than we thought.
Taichi, what he's doing is so incredibly unhinged. And, like, he's getting this following that he's gonna, like, it's gonna be like a social media hit person, essentially.
He literally is calling himself a god at this point.
None of this is good.
No, it's all bad. You should not be doing this. This is the exact kind of person who should not have internet fame.
Yes.
So I also think it's interesting to note that like the video that he got sent is shot from first person. So like I don't know if it, either one of the hostesses sent it or maybe Shibagaki or Shun. Like somebody sent it. It is first person because we see Tanaka on the table holding the gun. So
yeah.
So whoever was in that position, they sent that video in. So Nobu and Odakawa are having another meeting, and Nobu confirms that, yep, that's my gun, and that's a big problem.
The face is gun. Who knows what that gun's going to kill here soon, Tanaka.
Yep, and this is where Nobu kind of puts two and two together that this gunman is probably looking for him, given that his back window had also been knocked out prior to this shooting, and that like it said that it looked like the person was looking around the club for someone specific. So it's just like it's you, isn't it? And so at this point Nobu proposes, hey man, let's work together. Like the gunman is trying to kill you and they got my gun. So like, and he also mentions that like again this at this point he also mentions again that if Yano is involved in this shit, he can't do anything about it anyway. So he wants Odakawa to gather information on, like, what the hell's going on. And Odakawa is still just like, dude, leave me alone. I don't want to be involved in any of this. And he's just like, look, you help me out, and I'll make sure Goriki can return to his clinic. And Odakawa is just like, okay, one more condition. And he asks for Shirakawa to be released from her debt.
All of it.
Like, it's done. And Nobu agrees. So,
grudgingly agree.
So, he still cares. Mm-hmm. He still cares. He's had a little time to think about it. Our boy cares.
Absolutely. He comes back strong when needed.
Yep. So... Nobu says that he's going to go look for the man with the gun and that he wants Odakawa to go catch Taichi because he needs to shut that motherfucker up. Like, Odakawa is just like, yeah, like, I know who that guy is. And he figures that, like, he already knows him. It shouldn't be too hard to find him. So he'll just, you know, I'll go to his university and I'll just pick him up.
Yeah.
And then, like, he said, catching the gunman will be trickier. And Nobu has an ingenious plan that he's going to dress exactly like the gunman on Halloween and just walk around town.
Why, Nobu, do you think this is
going to be a great idea? I have nothing but great feelings about what's going to happen from here.
Oh, no. So I feel like we're on the cliff at the end of this episode.
Right!
I feel like
isn't that what it feels like? We're about to go over a cliff. So, another thing. All right. we got to talk about the animal thing now. This is where I said I was going to put a pin in something, and we're coming back to it. There are two lines here that I specifically put in the notes for you as well. And this is Odakawa mentioning that he's good at finding people in a crowd, and he's surprised that everyone else is so bad at it. So,
you know,
what are we? Okay, so since the beginning, and I want you to follow me here, because and you feel free to, like, if you think anything different, by all means, we've been seeing human, like, in the first two episodes, we saw human form at the scene of an accident. And what I think, I think this animal stuff is sus as hell.
Yes.
I don't think, like, this can't be reality, right? I think that maybe we're both kind of on the same page here, that maybe this kind of isn't what's really being seen.
Yeah.
So I think something really bad has happened to Odakawa at some point, and mentally he sees everyone as animals. Like, actual, yeah. like animals in the sense that, like, you're all terrible and I hate you all. And it manifests literally as them being animals.
Okay. Yeah, I can get on that. Yeah.
And the reason
you pointed out these... Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
And the reason that he's like, I can find people in a crowd because you were all different animals. That's what I think he's saying here, is that, like, I don't know why you all can't see it. You all look like different animals. How would I not be able to pick you out of a crowd? That's what that's what I think he's saying here.
I don't think I caught that the first time, but looking at these lines, I think you're absolutely right, because there's so many mentions so far of him with the humans, and the couple times he brings up animals, and people are like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And and then this line, like, I can't believe everybody else is so bad at it. Yeah, that's definitely, that's got to be connected.
I'm
all on board.
Yeah, I would not be shocked at some point if we pull it all back and, like, there's humans. Like, I would not be shocked. Like, I think that that's kind of, like, where we've kind of been heading with this train of thought from the get-go, I think, when we started seeing, you know, the human, the human at the accident. So I don't know. I don't know how any of that plays. I don't know, like, but I know that that is, like, an end game kind of thing of me to, for me to be throwing out there in the middle of the show. But it's just, like, this is where I feel right now, and I feel like they're putting all of this stuff here for a reason, and they're having characters say these specific things for a reason. And I think that, like, he sees the world as just, like, animals.
Yeah. No, I think I'm 100% behind that. There's so many clues to that so far, especially from his point of view and his words. It's always his words, almost. The only other spot I saw in the whole show mentioned somebody else having a horse face. Which I don't think we're there yet. I think that might be the end of this episode.
Right.
But my thought of that was, like, I mean, Sarah Michelle Gellar had a career being called a horse face. So,
absolutely.
Like, that's where my thought went with that. Like, oh, he just kind of looks like that.
Yeah, like, it's just, you just have a horse face.
And they're throwing
face.
That for, like, a curve.
Like, yeah, like, that could just be, like, yeah, you have a horse face, and that's why people have said, hey, this guy has a horse face, and that's just why you see it that way. Absolutely, good catch. So in the next scene, Baba is having a meeting with this producer, and it's kind of just going, well, the kind of way that you think that these kind of things are going to go when you have one member of a group of people that's kind of standing out. The people the people that want to make the money are going to want to make the money with the money maker. So it's just like, look, you kind of need to ditch Shibagaki, honestly. Like, he's kind of not doing much for you. And he just kind of, like, starts scheduling Baba for this, like, end of the year special event taping, and it's just like, it'll be next Friday. And then Baba's just like, no, like, the next round of the N1 Grand Prix, which is, like, a comedy tournament that he and the Shibagaki are involved with, like, that's happening. Like, we want to go make our deal there. And this producer is just kind of like, yeah, well, whatever, kid, do whatever you want to do.
It's sad.
And then guess who's back?
Hey, Poodle.
It's Poodle time.
Poodle.
Rui makes an appearance after having been gone for a while, and she's complaining that she hasn't seen Baba in a while. And I think that this whole little scene is an indication that these two are a thing, actually. Because Baba, in episode 2, I believe, mentions that he has a girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
So I think Rui is actually dating Baba here, and she's very concerned about his rising level of success. But she also makes sure to mention that Mystery Kiss's debut is going to be in a venue with 2,000 people, you know. Woo. So they're hey, well, you can fill that up. That's a damn good start.
That is.
And Baba is just nothing, but he's so happy for her. Like, he's yeah. just like, and she like tells him that like he shouldn't work so hard because, you know, he shouldn't have her ambition because she likes him being mm-hmm. being the opposite of her ambition. It's just like mm-hmm. oh, she likes him, like she likes, like the vibe that I get is that she likes him because he has a level of popularity which gives her, you know,
yes,
it gives her some status. So she's dating a famous person, but mm-hmm. she doesn't want him obtaining a level of fame that would surpass her. So she likes him where he's at. And like, look, if Shun can win a $1 billion yen lottery, then there is no damn reason at all that Baba can't become an international megastar. I'm almost betting
right.
money that Rui's career is going to go nowhere and Baba's going to be the one to take off.
Oh yeah! Oh, Baba's already taken off.
Yeah,
great. Rui's kind of taking all those coattails.
Yeah, he's but like they like she hugs him and everything, and like they do seem like they genuinely care for one another. I just think the fame thing is gonna probably tip her over the edge.
I think she's too competitive.
Yeah,
just straight up.
Yeah,
it's just gonna be.
She wants it all, and it's gonna be real bad.
Real life, they just don't stop no matter what. Yep. It's kind of awful.
Yep. Yeah. So Yamamoto interrupts their moment, and he kind of indicates to Baba, like, look, you two need to be careful about public displays of affection because she's an idol and she has to remain pure, like no boyfriends. Mm-hmm. She can't people, so like even though you two might be dating, nobody's ever going to be able to be allowed to know, basically. It's kind of
right.
What Yamamoto kind of points out here, but she's yeah. but she makes it very clear, like, hey, like make sure, you know, like we get together sometime, let's line our schedules up, let's make this work. So she thought, like, I think she is interested in him, and I think he very
yeah.
clearly likes her. He
I think that's very obvious.
So it'd be interesting to see what happens here. Like, I kind of feel like he is absolutely going to eclipse her in terms of popularity.
1,000%.
And like, we snap back to that line where Shio said, you know, she might kill somebody to get ahead. Mm-hmm. In fact, she may have already. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know if this show. Like, I don't know. I don't know if this show has enough time to work all of that in, but it's just, it's a very interesting thing for Shio to have said, and then for, you know. For Rui to kind of be as competitive as she is and in a relationship with somebody who is probably going to surpass her.
Oh, for sure. She'll handle it great, I'm sure.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Just as those Kakihana, Tanaka.
Oh, yeah.
All the others.
Everybody.
She's handling things so well.
Everybody. This is a show where everybody's handling everything. So. So this episode actually gets a special ending credits. Like, this is something I don't know if you know about anime, but sometimes anime will, like, sometimes they'll skip the opening, and then when a show skips its opening and is just running credits over a scene that's happening, that means, oh, the big shit's going down. And when they close an episode where they don't use the actual end credit theme or the end credit animation, it's usually like, oh, we're ending this episode on a poignant note. So anime has these little things they do sometimes where it's just like, you know, if you ever start an episode of a show and they skip the opening, buckle up. The shit's going down. So if any episode of this show just skips the opening, oh god, buckle up.
Okay.
We're done.
I'm going to be on full, especially since I love the opening.
Yeah, the opening is great.
Oh, God. Okay. But and if you ever think to yourself again, I don't know if you know this in anime, mm-hmm. just understand it's going to be no. I don't, this is all learning.
Yeah, this is all new to you. Yeah. I thought I would teach you that little, since we get a special ending here, and they want to end the episode on just like a nice little flourish. They typically do something different with the end credits, and that's what happens here, is that we get this scene of Shibagaki calling Baba, and he's trying to like meet up so they can practice their material for the N1. And like, we know that Baba wanted to do this earlier, but now mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, like no matter like how Shibagaki tries to schedule it, Baba's just always got something planned. It's like, oh no, I gotta shoot that day, or no, I got a photo shoot, or I got a podcast appearance. It's just like all Next of a sudden he just got no more time for our boy anymore. And then this episode ends with the saddest like scene of Shibagaki just walking through the city alone. He's just like, he sees, like, through a window in a store, and like Baba's on TV, and he's having this big moment, and it's just like the saddest thing. That last picture of the notes.
It's heartbreaking. He's just Shibagaki.
He's being left behind. It's so sad.
It is. It really is.
Like,
he's
yeah.
just being left behind. Oh, poor Shibagaki. Poor everybody.
Poor everybody. Poor everybody is where we end this run of episodes, because these three episodes were just basically abject misery a lot of the time.
Yeah. It, as a show, it continued to ramp up and get harsher, and as the episodes themselves all had very specific harsh takes on different sides of these characters.
Absolutely. It's rough. This is a rough set of episodes. It's so rough my voice just cracked. But yeah, so this was just a fantastic run of episodes. Episode 4 was just magnificent. What an amazing piece of art that episode was. And just the way we're moving the story, you know, the way all the pieces, they just feel so like it's one of the smoothest moving machines ever. It's so mm-hmm. well oiled. All of these plots are just kind of like weaving in and out of each other so effortlessly, so flawlessly, with such confidence. Like, this is a show that's just confident in everything it's doing.
Oh, 1,000,000,000%. It's like the hidden noir you've always wanted to see.
Absolutely.
It has so much mystery going on with every single character. It's only 6 episodes. They're only 22 minutes, but all the characters are so fleshed out already. We can already talk about so much with each different character. Like, obviously, some of them we don't know, but mm-hmm. even in the 5 or 3 minute little segments where they talk to each other, there's just so much going on in that time that it's like this just mystery deli huge sub sandwich. Like, you can't get it. Like, it just keeps getting bigger, and it's like, I can't finish
how do
this.
I
you keep, really do.
How do I stuff all this in my head?
Yeah. Like, you have to eat this in layers, or you're gonna get left behind.
All right. So, homework for next time. I have been advised by my pal Rhett from the Brain Trust that it would be best for us to do episodes 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Oh.
So we're doing 4 this time.
Okay. Oh, ooh, okay.
Oh, you just thought about that sandwich you were talking about? It got it got half a foot bigger.
Oh my God.
We're now doing eating 3.5 Subway footlongs.
And they're not even $5 anymore.
No, they're not.
$30.
You can get them for $5 sometimes. They have they do have a $5 menu sometimes. Where I live, they still have a $5 menu.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Okay. Where you live, that might be different. So, $30 footlong sub? Are you kidding me? I'll just make my own at home.
That's how we generally end up feeling around here when it comes to prices or a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm going to just make it at home.
It'd be better, you know?
So, yeah, we get to do 4 episodes this time around.
I'm super excited that. Holy crap.
Just you get to really live in it this time. Like, that extra time is going to mean a lot. But, yeah, that was
extra
what...
Extra chunks of
That's what Rhett told me. He said, like, this would probably be the better way to pace it, and it sets you up for being able to talk a lot of speculation and theories before you hit the last 3. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to watching these and then getting to talk about them. This has been a real good run of episodes, and this has been a really good episode of our fun little podcast. So, Toad, let everybody know where they can find that ass.
Find that ass!
And
finally at twitch.tv/polyplush. Oh, wait a second. You can find me at twitch.tv/toad22484. That is my Twitters, that's my YouTubes, but mostly my Twitch. I stream every day. Just had our 420 stream the other day.
420!
Oh, it was great. and once again, I must always appreciate Polly because she put so much work into all this and it's so much fun to do.
Well, I'm glad that you were having a great time. I knew that this was probably going to be fun. I didn't know it was going to be this much fun. Like, I underestimated the fun. So I am similarly having a great time, and I can't wait to get back and do another. You can find me at twitch.tv/polyplushy or twitter.com/poodleplushy or whatever.
A poodle.
They'll find me. Poodle.
Poodle, yeah.
And I guess with that, with it being 1 in the morning, which may be the latest I've ever ended a podcast episode recording.
Thank you, Polly. Sorry.
Nothing to apologize for. Trust me. This ended up fantastic. I only got a little spicy.
Ooh, you did. And that's okay. Sometimes things need to get a little spicy.
Exactly. I guess until we see you next time. Poodle.
Poodle.